This episode is brought to you by Meow Wolf. Because Danceportation returns to Meow Wolf Denver on Saturday, June 1st, with a takeover by Jay Wara. And they've got even more killer DJs to announce soon. Don't miss this rare cosmic dance party pulsing through all four floors of Convergence Station. You know what I was tripping out about reading this, Paul? It was like, there are four floors. It feels like there's like 10. Tickets are on sale now. Visit meowwolf.org to get yours. That's meowwolf.org. Floors are not a concept that I have once I step inside Meow Wolf. Today on CityCast Denver, Mayor Mike Johnston came into office last year with a whole lot of new energy to take on Denver's homelessness crisis. So is it working? Denver Gazette reporters Chris Osher and Jenny Deem spent months investigating our city's vast network of public agencies and private service providers, and they're on today to explain how Denver is spending so much and still lagging behind other cities. Today is Thursday, May 9th. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. Jenny Deem and Chris Osher, welcome to CityCast Denver.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to be here.
So I guess I'd just like to start with, why did you two want to do this deep dive into Denver's approach to the homelessness crisis before our new mayor had even been in office for a year?
Well, it's just been such a long, you know, issue that's been prominent in the city. People have been talking about it. It was a big issue in the mayor's race. And so we thought it was time to take a deep dive look at it and, you know, did find that, you know, it has been getting steadily worse over recent years and that the mayor's initiative has made some gains in some places, but falls short in some other areas.
I think for me, I used to live in Denver and then I was away for about 7 or 8 years. And coming back, I was really quite taken and quite shocked by just the sheer numbers of people who were living on the streets. And as I began talking to some advocates, which was one of our first steps, one of the things that they said that really jumped out and I think was kind of a catalyst was the idea that there is a lot of money being spent and that it is not necessarily the money spent and the way it's being distributed is not necessarily helping the long-term goal of helping people get off the street.
Jenny, it's interesting to me. You said you've been gone for a while. Chris, I don't know how long you've been here, but I just can't help but think of the 12 years prior to this administration. We had the same administration in place who was also working on this problem. I wonder if you all took that into consideration or thought about at the difference sort of between the Hancock and Johnston administration or how those two administrations kind of fit together in this issue.
You know, it looks at some federal data that goes back a few years. So some of the slide, you know, obviously took place during the Hancock administration, which ended up, you know, becoming part of the mayor's race with both of the candidates really articulating a need to address homelessness. So I think the numbers do reflect that the city was on a bad trajectory.
Chris, you know, we had Mayor Johnston on the show recently, and he touted his administration's work on homelessness so far. And he said federal officials told him no city has been as effective as his team in such a short amount of time. But I wonder, what story did the numbers tell you, like, about how Denver stacks up?
Well, first off, I think since the start of 2018, and then the federal data goes through the end of 2022, might be 23, I can't remember exactly, but homelessness has tripled in the city, adding the most number of homeless people during that time span than any other metro area. Also, it showed that the way the programs were working, you had a much higher return to homelessness after exiting, you know, a successful program than other communities and one of the worst in the nation. And you also had fewer successful exits. So when they were exiting, they were also not exiting to what is called permanent housing. So, you know, and when you also looked at contracting in 2023, much of it was oriented around emergency services. Mayor Johnson has made a strong push to come up with a new program. And there are also these 8 sites that he's created that people funnel to. Once they enter one of those sites, a hotel, you know, a former hotel site, they're not moving out of that, is what the data that is more recent shows. So they've had some gains, what I would call easier cases to get people into housing. But these people who end up going into a former hotel site, a micro community site, we're not seeing those people move through. I think there's something like somewhere between 700 to 900 that are on those, have entered those 8 sites, but only roughly somewhere between 22 to 30 have actually found permanent housing once they enter those sites.
Mm. Yeah, this is making me think about this idea of effectiveness versus outcomes. And maybe it's just that we're measuring things in different ways. Jenny, you spoke to people experiencing homelessness about what they've experienced during this transition from Mayor Hancock to Mayor Johnston last year. What did you hear from them?
Well, what I heard, it wasn't so much the transition, although there was one woman who was in an encampment. And actually, she says that she actually spoke to the mayor when he had come down to an encampment, and he had made a promise that he would get her out before they swept. What I think I heard almost universally, depending on, you know, it doesn't really matter which administration, but what I was hearing from people was that they did want some sort of permanence, some sort of normalcy in their lives. They felt like that it would be easier to get off drugs or get a job or just basically relaunch their life, improve their lives, if they were in some place stable where they were not always looking over their shoulder and trying to figure out what's next. And I think the one universal theme was that they would try to get on a list, or they would talk to a caseworker, or they would, you know, make some effort. There would be some initial effort, and then it would just disappear. They either didn't hear back from the caseworker, the caseworkers changed, and they just sort of fell through the cracks. And I think particularly one woman who is in one of the hotels, the woman who spoke with the mayor, and she assumed that once she went into that hotel, that it was going to be, you know, a pretty short stay, and that she would work with a caseworker and get her back into, well, what she was really hoping for was either a townhouse or a rental house. And, you know, months and months went by and it just didn't happen. I think that the one of the big failings that the people I spoke to talked about was the lack of follow through and the kind of wraparound services. It's one thing to get somebody off the street. It's another thing to keep them off the street, to give them the support that they need so they can succeed.
I think one of the key things also is that once you become in a homeless state, your problems get much worse. I mean, and that sounds kind of obvious, but it happens in ways that people don't think about. Homeless people, for instance, drug use goes up sometimes because they need to take meth because they're afraid of falling asleep and getting robbed. Or, you know, if you have mental health issues, you don't have access to the type of medication you need to stay stable. You're always on edge. And so you begin to decompensate. And that gets to this thinking that if you're oriented toward only emergency services, sheltering, which does play a role, obviously, but if you're not funneling people from that into casework, into case management, into wraparound services, you're never going to get ahead of the problem. You're always going to have people struggling because they can't get to a stable situation where they can begin to recover. But given that, you can't just give them housing and expect that to work either. You have to have, you know, really strong casework. And I think Jenny found, you know, Houston in particular has really oriented itself around, you know, coordinating services, getting strong casework. The city pushed back a little bit and said, well, you know, Houston has some unique dynamics in that housing isn't quite as expensive there. And there was a flood that allowed them to access some federal money. But it seemed in the reporting that Houston has a much more coordinated approach.
Well, and let's talk about that, Jenny. Chris, I'm glad you brought that up. Jenny, you used to work for the Houston Chronicle, and you reported on how Denver's approach differs to Houston, which has become something of a national model. But beyond the dynamics that are different about Houston in terms of like housing price, and they had a housing voucher program that was different, but what are they doing differently, or what are we doing differently here in Denver compared to Houston?
Well, I thought it was fascinating because you're right. I did used to live in Houston. I lived there for 6 years. And Houston's not the only place, may I say. There are other communities, but we just focused on Houston because it once was one of the worst for homelessness in the country. The thing that they did that they talked about is that they said, well, yes, of course, we use emergency shelters that have to, you know, take that first step. But I think that what Houston has done well is they have about 100 different nonprofit, public agencies, all these different groups, and they have done a very good job of keeping them corralled and working towards a common goal. And you would think, oh, well, of course, but in the dynamics of working with different groups is that sometimes they splinter. Sometimes you have, I don't know, for lack of a better word, a turf war or some, you know, competition or something. And Houston has done a very good job of coordinating all of these different disparate groups towards a common goal. And their common goal, they have made a very robust effort towards permanent housing, going back to what we've been talking about, the housing first philosophy, that you've got to get people out of crisis and you've got to get them stabilized. And then once they are there, that's when you can really work towards keeping them there. And one of the things that was fascinating about Houston was, I think it was the vast majority, maybe 90%, maybe more, have been in their permanent housing for at least 2 years, which is a success. Another thing that they told me that they did in Houston is they worked to really engage landlords, give them the incentives to rent to people who have been homeless. And often that is a big barrier. Landlords don't, there's a lot of paperwork sometimes, they don't want to do that. So if as a city, you can say, okay, this is how we're going to make it easier for you, this is how we are going to incentivize renting to people, I think that will go a long way. And that is something that Houston has done.
Well, it's like the barriers that a caseworker can help with, like some homeless people don't have IDs. You know, maybe they don't have, you know, regular checking accounts. These are things that caseworkers need to, you know, help, you know, an individual overcome. Another thing is we did do a deep dive on contracting and where in 2023 the city was putting its money. And it was overwhelmingly tilted toward emergency services, very temporary solutions with, you know, some of the programming only showing something like 2-3% exits to permanent housing. And even, you know, those providers saying, well, we just don't view that as our role. We're here to, you know, provide a night for people to sleep in, have breakfast in the morning, and then they're on their way. But we don't view our role as trying to steer them toward a permanent state. But you should have a more robust push toward permanency according to the Houston model. Seattle does a better job of this also. So that was interesting to me to see that so much of the money, at least in 2023, was really oriented toward these emergency services. I will say, you know, I did talk to a former official who ran homeless programs when Hickenlooper was mayor, and he kind of said, look, you know, I do think they need to get oriented around permanent housing more, But he also said, you know, Denver's struggling with, you know, a migrant influx, fentanyl crisis. And he said that means that you've got more of an emergency need. So maybe that has tilted so much toward emergency.
This is such an interesting thing because it's almost about language here. Like, you both have talked about this housing first model or this pathway that it seems Houston has created to make that the priority for each person they deal with, is getting them into a permanent situation. And that often means like working with landlords. But we hear this all the time too in Denver, like they're also working on a housing first model, but then they turn around and, like you said, continue these contracts with shelter providers and service providers. I just wonder if either of you know why or can tell from what you've researched and found in this investigation, why does Denver keep talking about housing first, but then turn around and continue to rely on the shelter model?
Well, that's kind of the big question. I mean, there was even a section in the story that dealt with one provider where the city had kind of said, hey, we don't see a lot of case management here. We see people really just staying in an emergency state. What are you doing to move these people? So the city had some concerns about that, but yet they still expanded that provider under the new mayor's initiative and gave them more of a role. And it's not like we didn't find some providers that really did do a better job. The, you know, Jewish Family Service seems to have really robust outcomes. You know, something like 86% of their individuals end up in permanency. And when, you know, I interviewed them, they said, we put all of our effort into casework. That looks different for each individual, each family. We really try to keep, you know, manager to individual ratios 20 to 1, and that, you know, we are sure once they get into a permanent situation that we get wraparound services to help them stay there. So it was interesting to me that that provider does such a good job, but they get something, I think, I'm doing this from memory, but I think it's like $1 million from the city in 2023, but the other shelter operations get, you know, $8 million. And so certainly there's a role for emergency sheltering. Maybe there's a role to really look at some of these providers that get better outcomes and see if you can give them a greater share of the pie or funnel more money to them, because they seem to really be working well.
The other thing that I found fascinating, kind of building on what Chris is saying, is one of the things that I think the city has been very, in the past, has been very proud of, is what they call their rapid rehousing. And on the surface, it looks like permanent housing. There was a woman who was profiled, it's kind of heartbreaking, actually. After some struggles to get a caseworker, she did find herself in an apartment for 2 years. Which sounds great, but she's disabled. She is not going to be able to do what you would assume, well, get a steady job and, you know, take over. She needed the help. And when that 2 years in a contract was up, which was, you know, just last week, it was up. I mean, and she kept saying, well, what now? And on the very last possible day, on the day that it expired, she got a call and said, oh, good news, we're extending it for 3 months. Well, she said, well, but what happens after 3 months? And they said, well, we can't tell you, but just, you know, have faith that it'll all work out. Well, she said, no, I mean, I can't live like this. And she's back in her car. She's living in her car. And I think one of the things that she said that was particularly heartbreaking is, she says it's almost harder to have something that feels permanent, that feels normal, and have it taken away than to have never had it. And I think this is something else that the city could do, is they can look at those places that are keeping people and helping them throughout their journey versus putting them someplace and then just forgetting about them.
Yeah, or just saying, we house somebody, so check, you know.
And, you know, the federal data that we reviewed did show that other metro areas do a much better job at, once they find somebody a successful permanent housing, they do a much better job of keeping an individual from returning to a homeless state. For instance, Seattle metro area, only 14% of the people who find permanency end up homeless again within 2 years. In Denver, it's 33%. So this woman has become part of that large number. And when you look at all of the 48 largest metro areas, the average is 22%. So Denver has risen to, and it's been a pretty dramatic rise since 2018. So yes, some of that occurred under Hancock's watch, but we were historically also trying to understand how did this become such an intractable problem in Denver? And I think that's part of it. And again, this woman that Jenny found and talked to is one of those that, you know, the new administration didn't find a solution for. She was found in, you know, put into this housing during Mayor Hancock's administration, but she continued to have a bad outcome under a new administration.
One more thing, I kind of want to also go back. We didn't really talk about it, but the mayor has this housing dashboard that I think we've all been watching in the media for sure, which is where he's been keeping track of folks that have been housed. Again, this is such a subjective or sort of vague. It's hard to know what he means by housed on this dashboard. But I just wonder, you guys looked at a ton of data and then there's this dashboard. Can you, either of you, talk about what you saw there, or sort of is there something going on in the messaging from the mayor's office, or is the dashboard reflective of what you found?
The one thing is, again, when you look at the dashboard, they are seeing some permanent housing gains. But if you ask them, okay, give me a breakdown of the people who enter the 8 sheltering sites that are supposed to funnel to permanency, and that's where you do not see the gains. So, yeah, I can look here. There are 800 individuals, according to, I think this was mid-April data, that remain in kind of temporary shelter arrangements. And about 250 have left temporary sheltering. But of those that left shelter care, just 13% secured permanent housing. So you had a great number of them going right back to the streets. And that kind of speaks to the individual that Jenny talked to, said, I don't feel safe here. I almost feel like I should just return back to the street, because this one particular hotel site, which was run by the Salvation Army, says, you know, they don't believe that site is dangerous, but there have been homicides there. This woman in particular said drug use is rampant there. And those people do not seem to be moving once they enter that site into the permanency. Now, you know, it's fairly early in the initiative. Maybe that picks up. And the city did say, look, people, this did sort of, like, we heard this as a theme both from providers and from city officials. They were like, well, it takes time to build trust. These people have been homeless. They don't trust the system. But, you know, the individuals we talked to were like, we just want the system to help us.
Well, thank you both so much. This is really enlightening. And we will put a link in our show notes for our listeners to be able to read this. You did such comprehensive and incredible reporting on this story. And I just want to thank you both for being here. So, Chris and Jenny, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed this show, why not take a minute to tell Jewish Family Services about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Bye-bye.
But it's not jumping. Well, yes, it is. I was going to say it's not jumping when I talk, but it kind of is.